you know, when people talk about all these pre-workout products, all these expensive pre-workout drinks and stuff that they take, I would rather do 10 milligrams of Cialis over yep. any of the different aminos and whatnot. Some water and some sodium to me is much more important than any of the pre-workout products on the mix. Because, I mean, everyone knows when you get a great pump and you've been taking Cialis and you're in contest shape, it's like your shoulders are just 20% bigger. Everything is bursting, you know? Because it does what it does. It's a PDE5 inhibitor. It increases cyclic GMP, and it causes, it basically makes nitric oxide easier and relaxes smooth muscle tissue.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear with coaches Skip Hill, Andrew Berry, myself, Scott McNally. And all of our programming is brought to you by you, the people of Patreon. Thank you guys for your support over at Patreon. We try to take as many questions as we can from over there. And we've got a bunch of those today. We have questions from the YouTube page. If you guys want to take part in the next show, then definitely comment below. Plus comments, likes, all that stuff. It helps to boost our programming. And hey, if you're new here, let me encourage you to subscribe and ring the bell. We have several bodybuilding podcasts that come out each week. Guys, I wanted to get this thing rolling. We've got a bunch of listener questions to handle. Andrew and I are going head to head. I don't think it's going to be that dramatic about continuous glucose monitors. I just got one this past week. I think I'm like 4 days in now. But Andrew, you said in text, you're not a fan. Why? I didn't want to ask you in text. I was like, I'm just going to wait. Yeah. I want to know. Yeah. I want to hear it when we talk.
Well, what is it telling you right now for your blood number?
Well, right now, my phone is upstairs. I forgot it upstairs, okay. So I can't tell you.
So you have a continuous glucose monitor, but your phone isn't at the ready, so I don't know.
Let me go.
It's tracking constantly.
Yeah.
I prefer blood sugar monitors, the old-fashioned finger prick. Get a little drop of blood and test it. Why? Because it tells you what your blood sugar is right now. Whereas the CGMs or continuous glucose monitors for Skip here, they tell you what your blood sugar would have been like 15 to 20 minutes ago. So there's a lag there because the CGMs, they're not testing your blood. They're testing the interstitial space. They're basically testing the glucose content in your fat cells, right? So let's say you got a client who's like, man, I'm feeling really hypo right now because they're towards the end of their prep and that, maybe their blood sugar has fallen to 60, but their monitor might be telling them that they're still at 80. So they're like, oh, I'm not so bad. I don't need to eat something. Right.
Yeah.
But then they continue to get deeper and deeper in the hole. Their blood sugar finally gets down to 40 and then their monitor starts beeping saying, oh shoot, you're at 60 now. It's that lag time that I don't like personally. Other reasons, they're irritating for a lot of people to have to wear them, especially those that exercise and sweat a lot, which is our population.
I feel it. I feel it. In fact, I'll bust it out here. So I was kind of nervous. This is the device here. So you just take this little thing. It's got the little screw cap on it. Pop that off. Stick it, here, and then bang, pop it in. And then there's like a little sticker. This is the backing to the sticker here. Mm-hmm. And now... This is continually, let's see, I move my microphone. This is continually monitoring my blood glucose. Like I said, for about
not
4 days
blood,
now.
Not your blood glucose. Not your blood glucose, though. That's the thing.
What do you mean? It's not going to tell me, it's not going to give me my BG reading?
No. I just told you. So it's testing the sugar content in an interstitial space. It's because it doesn't actually go into your bloodstream, whereas a blood sugar monitor, you're actually squeezing a drop of blood out. It's testing the sugar content in your blood.
But you're getting the reading, though.
You're getting a reading, yes.
So here's my thought. Number one, I hate pricking my finger. But number two, you can get, I think it's amazing, man. You can get a continual reading. So here's why I got it. I noticed that first of all, I've gone hypo all my life. You guys both know that. Andrew, you've called it. You've been like, dude, you're sweating. You're going hypo, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah. I start stuffing a protein bar in my mouth or, crackers or something. So I figured after all this time, I went to my doctor and I talked to her about it. And she was like, yeah, I'll give you this one for free. So I paid nothing for it. If you go to Amazon, they're like a couple $100 now. And it's going to work anywhere from 7 days to 14 days. And it's going to give me a nonstop reading all through that time. Every time I eat, I'm logging what I'm eating along with it. It's measuring my blood sugar while I'm asleep. Like constantly, all this is going on. If anything gets weird, I can look back at that and I'm getting just so much data. Now, it's not something that I would say like, oh, because I agree with you, Andrew. I wouldn't say like, hey, this is what we want to do nonstop, but like moving forward. But to be able to see how is my body responding is it's amazing, man. I don't know why somebody wouldn't want that much information. You know, I've been experimenting like, okay, I'll have oatmeal for breakfast. Okay, I'll have cream of rice for breakfast. You know, I'll have bread for breakfast. And then my proteins and proteins and fats are the same. And so each day I'm watching, how does this change? How does different carbs affect me? So it's been pretty cool. When I go hypo, I'm actually seeing, yeah, I'm actually going hypo. I'm seeing I'm dropping down to like 60, 50. You'll get like a warning that, you know, they says in 25 minutes, you're going to be in like a danger zone or whatever. So anyway, I find it fascinating. And now moving forward, like whatever, you know, a week from now or a month from now, when I don't have it on anymore, I'm going to have had all that information to be able to look back at this and see like what my body does, you know, I have a better understanding of like the moment to moment. Now, sure, you could like prick your finger every 10 minutes through the day, but that'd be a pain in the butt to get this much information. You know what I mean?
Can I interject? Because I don't understand. Well, I'm going to be honest, completely transparent. I don't know much about CGMs. I didn't even know what the acronym was. And that's why I asked you guys what it was. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what it is. How is it that you can prick your finger and get an accurate read of your blood sugar level? Maybe I just don't understand the CGM and how it's working, but if there's a constant, there's a needle in your arm. So
it doesn't go into your bloodstream though. It goes into the interstitial space, like basically your fat cells, right?
So it's like it's a carryover
because eventually a certain amount of blood sugar is going to get into the peripheral and interstitial space.
Gotcha.
So that's why I mentioned there's like a 15 to 20 minute lag in terms of the data that it's given you.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So here's my reason.
I prick myself in the tricep or I use this CGM, what the hell's the difference? But I get what you're saying now. And it's an honest question because I legit just don't know that much about them.
Yeah.
And for the reasons that Andrew said, because to me, I just think when you showed me your arm, Scott, I'm like, how are you doing overhead tricep extensions?
I trained arms yesterday. It's a tiny little needle. You don't even feel it. Like I did it first. The first day it was weird. And I talked to a couple diabetics that use them. And so I felt kind of weirded out by it. And I even felt like a little bit nervous. I'm like, man, I'm taking gear shots, like, you know, with big old, you know, 1.5 inch syringes, you know, for a decade, 15 years, probably longer than 20 years. Why am I feeling this way? But then once you pop it on, like you don't feel it. There's nothing to it. Okay. The first day, like I said, you get used to it. The first day it was kind of weird, but there's nothing to it. You wouldn't even know what's there now.
Okay. There's one more thing though, that you guys wouldn't consider, but I would. Tan line.
Tanning.
Not
going to
happen.
Yep. I knew he was going to go with the tan.
Oh my God.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, my thought is just that like to have all this information to know, you know, how is my body like, and what's really been cool is to see what happens when I sleep, you know, because you can wake up and get your fasted levels and sometimes then you get like that dawn phenomenon, things start climbing the longer you've been fasted, and we know that like one reading isn't, you know, one reading is just a picture in one picture in time. But the more information we have, the more that fills that out. So being able to just kind of go back, I'm going to look at like 2 weeks of what my body's done, what I've eaten. You could track your activity too, between like cardio, you know, I'll do cardio and I'll be like, okay, let's see what happens here. I'm going to do just 20 minutes of walking, you know, and see what happens, or a half hour walk outside. And it's cool. It's really cool. And I wish, honestly, if I could have had this 20 years sooner, I think that it would have fast tracked me with knowing how to get into shape. I'll say it's that great. Honestly, I stand behind 110%.
There's a rabbit hole here. I just don't know if you guys want to go down it.
What's that?
Big one.
Which one?
Insulin and getting lean. What insulin levels and getting lean? What about using exogenous insulin every day? Using it for high carb days or anything else and getting lean. I just, if you want to go down the rabbit hole, go for it. But I don't want to take this off.
Checking the effects, checking effects of the addition of exogenous insulin, say 1 to 2 days a week, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I think what happens is we're on this. You guys may not be, but I don't know exactly where you stand on it. But there's a lot of people who think that insulin is this giant obstacle and hurdle that you cannot get lean. And I'm taking a lot of insulin, and I'm getting lean as.
Oh, you know my stance, Skip. I mean, I've used insulin straight through every single prep. Like, I won't start using it usually until I start prep. You know what I mean?
Okay. I am blown away by how many people, and this isn't a shot at anybody because clearly we all have different approaches and we have different methods, but I'm really, like, this to me is a very antiquated approach. And it's really kind of surprising to basically say or think that the use of insulin, especially during a prep or any cut phase for that matter, dramatic cut phase, like you want to get, you know, peeled. So we'll call it a prep phase, is just this giant hurdle that is going to get in the way of you doing that. It's mind blowing. I have a hard time wrapping my brain around it.
Well, it's because people look at the definition or the actions of insulin when they look it up, insulin storage hormone. Sure. Right. And then they see like it negates the effects of say hormone sensitive lipase in that instant, or, you know what I'm saying? It's the same thing as saying, well, you can't grow muscle during a cut, right? Yeah. Or during any type of deficit whatsoever. Well, we all know you can, because if you structure things properly, you can have times of fat loss during the day and you can have times of anabolism during the day. Right. So I think you're right. It's an antiquated thing that using any type of insulin during a contest prep or during a cut phase, it's not going to work. But I think there's a lot more coaches today. Actually, I'll credit younger coaches with having more of the mindset to experiment with insulin. And I think a lot of it comes from, actually I'll give credit to John Meadows for a lot, you know, for putting stuff out about it and for talking about his use with it, as well as a lot of his clients, you know, using it during their contest prep. So I think the attitude has changed, or the dogmatic, insulin fat gain, that's out the window now.
Mm-hmm. You know what's changed my blood sugar the most, and I was surprised by this, was an apple.
Mm.
I mean, apple, like, you're thinking, okay, yeah, there's some carbs in there. But, like, I was surprised. It took me up. And it's weird because I'm finding that I'm not super responsive to insulin, it seems. Like, I might actually have some health stuff going on, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to get this checked out. I'm not going to, like, read into it too much more, because after this, then we're going to get some, you know, I'm going to get blood work done. I want to check, like, my fasted insulin, stuff like that. And I haven't seen my A1C in a while either. But I was surprised to see what an apple does. And then I was surprised to see, like, what happens through the night. Like, you can just kind of track it all along. So I think that, no, Andrew, I'm with you that I wouldn't say it's a replacement, but there's so much information to have for like $200. If you can get one for $200, man, it's like moving forward. It's cool to have data. The opposite of that is
too much data.
Yeah. The opposite of that is that, like, you can really figure out a lot without knowing anything, if that makes sense.
You know, that's funny, because I was thinking the same thing. If you're really new to, and especially taking your blood sugar levels, and you see it as this huge inconvenience, and, oh, I got to do this. Like, it is a pretty easy fix, or a pretty easy way to gain a lot of information early and try to learn relatively quickly. But Andrew makes a good point too. It's not really in the moment, but I think it can give you a lot of information. I'm torn on this one. I can't really, you know how I love to pick sides, but I can't on this one. I see the pros and the cons on both sides.
You could absolutely use both.
I'm not doing it.
Yeah. And that's what they encourage you to do. Like, diabetics don't just rely on one, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm just thinking, okay, so I have a client and we're checking blood sugar, particularly over the final week where we're loading them, right? Because I don't want to add another meal. Or carb content to the next meal until I see that their blood sugar has cleared, right? Yeah. I don't want to compound. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to rely on a continuous glucose monitor. I want to find out what's happening in that moment. Because if we wanted to eat 2.5 hours after that last meal, okay, let's test it now. Are you still a little high? Let's give it a few more minutes, or let's shoot a little insulin, and we'll go from there and test again in 25 minutes and see if we're ready for the next meal. That's kind of where I'm coming from the application thing. I don't think getting more information, especially in an off-season setting, is a bad idea. And seeing how different carbohydrates react. I was going to say the apple being more of a fructose content sugar, that you might have an issue with fructose versus sucrose. So that's something for you to look at. Yeah, or glucose, sorry. That's something for you to pay attention to. And I would experiment with other high fructose content foods. And maybe, I can't remember what fruit has a higher fructose content than apples. I think apples is up there around like 35-36% by carbohydrate content. But I think there's some that are like in that 45-50. So maybe play with those and see if you also have issues.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I'll have another week. You can get like supposedly up to 20 days, more like 10 to 14 is usually what works before it stops working.
Wait, let me ask, why does it stop working? The sensor, the machine itself?
I think that the needle eventually like stops sending data. It just like it.
You could get another one though, right? Down.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But then it would be like, you know, basically our goal here is just to see as much information as we can while I have it, you know,
and
then take so that information and apply it moving forward.
Yeah. So that's why I said they're about $2,000 a year. And you were like, no, they're $200. I was like, because people that have diabetes and that are, you know, being prescribed these things to where they're costing somewhere around $2,000 all in for them, even with insurance. So I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't you just keep pricking yourself six, seven, eight times a day for a 25 cent strip or whatever. That's where I was going with the cost thing.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. But one more thing about what Skip said about, you know, the insulin, using insulin during preps. I think people get confused about stuff. The most important thing is to be insulin sensitive throughout your prep, right? Like you don't want to start someone in prep without insulin sensitivity because you're spending the first 4 weeks fixing that before you go in. So I think that's where we could definitely use the CGMs. We can use, the HOMA IR calculation. We can use your A1C, those types of things. I think you need to be in a good state in terms of your insulin sensitivity to burn fat, but you can absolutely use insulin on top of that.
Yeah. It's cool though. I'm having fun. Like it's exciting. Yeah. Cause I've been watching too, like I'm just paying super close attention to how I feel. And then if I'm not feeling great, then I'll be like, well, hey, what's going on right now with the blood sugar? Let's see what's going on with that. You know what I mean? It's one more piece of information. Before that, I'd look at my watch and I'd be like, okay, well, what's my heart rate right now? Then go take my blood pressure, see what my blood pressure is. I'm just trying to get to the root of some stuff here, you know, and really try to understand my body. So I'm freaking pumped, man. And if any of my clients wanted to get one, I'm all for it if it's not going to be, you know, overly cost burdening. Some people I know, man, what I've heard is that the biohacker crew, they're about like running it 24/7, 365.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
And that I think all three of us would be against.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be against it if you're doing, like, I remember Skip used to do tons of experiments back in the intense muscle days with different foods or different diets, and you'd have, like, test groups. You'd take on, I think, like, 10 clients, and I don't know if you did, like, a reduced rate with them, and you're like, you got to do exactly what I say. We're doing I'm not coaching you the same way I would normally coach other people. I'm trying experiments out on you, and they would sign up for it, which I thought was freaking awesome. So what I was thinking was, okay, doing experiments of, okay, now we're going to try these types of fatty acids with these meals. We're going to manipulate fat content with keep carbohydrates and proteins the same and see what that does. And then maybe manipulate proteins, right?
Those are the things that I'm trying to do, but on a shorter, a shorter period. When I say the 365 thing, I'm thinking more like, okay, so I'm going to do fitness. That means I have to have my gym membership and I have to have my watch. And then I also need to get a ring in case my watch isn't accurate. And then I got to get my glucose monitor. You know what I mean? Like these are not prerequisites, I think is what my point is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I ask you guys about Cialis in bodybuilding? I wanted to get your takes. We've talked about it before. I feel like there's been, like 2010, we talked about it back then a lot, and there's been a resurgence. I think Dave and I talked about this earlier in the week. There's been a resurgence with the TRT companies. They put you on the TRT. The next thing you know, they want to optimize your growth hormone levels with a secretagog. And then the next thing they know is like, you could use a little Cialis too on top of that. And it's just, you know, one after the next of the drugs they're prescribing to you. All for profit, by the way. Notice we're probably not getting a TRT sponsor, me talking like this.
Well, but we're not necessarily saying that that stuff doesn't work. We're just saying they're trying to find every avenue they can to improve your physical, sexual, and mental functioning, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, or their profit margin, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, and they're using it for the other reasons too. So besides the obvious, the sexual side with Cialis, can you guys talk a little bit about like your experiences personally or with people that you've known, and maybe even like go into like historically what we've done with it in bodybuilding?
Well, I'll start with the fact that the main reason I take it is because that's not my phone. That was my cock. I'm the cock. That's what I'm saying right there. No, I had to get everybody's attention. The real reason that I took it or started taking it was because I had heard about the blood pressure issues. And it did. Look, using it, and I'm a little higher than most, and I'll tell you why, because it was about the joke earlier. I want the blood pressure change or effect. And I get about 10 points between like 9 and 11. I am lower blood pressure on Cialis, but I take 10 milligrams a day. That's a high dose for the average person. Usually they're at 5 milligram. You know, that sometimes they're even a little bit lower. But I'll be honest, I rather enjoy the other side effect of it. And I didn't have an issue to begin with. I'm not trying to give too much information, but if you make something good, even gooder, then there's nothing wrong with that either. So I have been taking it constantly since, I don't even know, probably 2010. I'm guessing it's in there somewhere. And if I run out, I notice that my blood pressure will start to jump up a little. It's not huge, but it's enough to matter. I actually see a better, and I don't know that a lot of people do, I see a better impact from Cialis than I do Telmisartan. How's that? You know, it's like, holy shit. And I take Telmisartan now. I've said to you guys before, I take it for the left ventricular benefits much more so than I take it for, blood pressure. And I don't have blood pressure issues. I mean, I'll run high when I'm, you know, the typical predictable stuff, when my weight is higher in the off season and I'm eating more. And I know when that happens without even taking the blood pressure rate, because my wife would be like, oh yeah, you were snoring a little bit more last night. Yeah. I snore under two situations. I'm drunk and I haven't drank since 2010, or I snore when my weight is up. And I take a lot of growth hormone, and I still don't snore from added tissue growth yet, at least yet. So I'm one of the few in the industry who's been training for a long time and doing gear for a long time who has never used a CPAP machine, because I've never needed to. Now, in part, I admit, I'll be the first to say, for one of you guys do, I'm also not as big as everybody else, because, you know, I mean, I don't go usually over 220 very often in the off season. If I do, it's 230, and it's only 4 or 5 months, 6 months, and then I'm back down under 2. I'm almost always under 220, and I'm what, 5'9"?
So you're very lean. You're lean by bodybuilding standards.
Yeah, I'm under a little bit under 210 right now. I'm starting to feel good. It gets a little crazy under 210, so my face will start sucking in, and kind of like the look. I don't like the feel, but I like the look.
I always loved it too. You know, people are like, oh, your face, you must hate that. It's like, no, this is my battle armor right here. It shows you that I do the things that you can't.
Yep. when you're older, I know I've noticed this. Maybe I can't speak for other people, but I look back on pictures of when I was bulking back in, you know, the 2000s and 2010. I'm like, how was I good with having that round, fat face? I just look horrible. Yeah. And I like when I start to get pulled in. I feel like I look younger. Maybe I don't, but I feel like I do. I feel like my face is bony. I like that. I have bones in my face instead of this. I call it the Phil Heath face. That's not a slam to him, but he could be shredded and he still has that round moon face.
Same with Jay most of the time. Yeah, Jay still had like a rounder face.
Yeah, there's some guys that are like that. No matter how conditioned they get, they still just have this.
Yep.
Yeah. You know? But yep. Yeah.
And it's just not appealing to me. It's not a slam to them, but no, I don't like that. I like the dry. And look, I'm one of those guys who would rather be starving than stuffed. I can take stuff from a meal after I've been hungry, but I don't like that feeling. It's very that lethargic blood pressure, you know, stomach full. No, let my stomach be small, which is an age thing too. The older I get, the smaller and tighter I want my stomach. I don't want my stomach out like where my chest is. I don't want that. That's old guy stuff.
You probably also feel like I do. Like I feel way more alert when I'm hungry. Like hunger keeps me able to just crank. Whereas eating larger meals, all I want to do is sit and stare at the wall for like, you know, or I nod off and I fall asleep. Or
what about business? Know. We were talking about this before we pushed the button. I am incredibly productive in life when I am leaner or in a prep phase.
Until the end. Shit. Until the, like that last, like after like 5 weeks out, then I'm like, then I go from like really good to zero, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's, for me, it's, like, it's a personality trait too. It's like a, the pedal is either to the floor or the car isn't moving. Yeah. I'm an all or none 100% or F it type of person, personality. It just is what it is.
One of the common questions we get asked by you guys is, what would you do differently with your bodybuilding if you could go back in time? Given all the experience and education I have today, there's a number of things that I would have done differently. One of them is that I would have started using collagen sooner. Collagen is one of the few supplements that will actually rebuild connective tissue. It took me tearing my supraspinatus in 2021 to get with the program. I use True Nutrition's hydrolyzed beef collagen. I get the unflavored version. I pay for it myself, just like you guys do. I use 20 grams a day, mix it into my coffee. It's totally unflavored. You don't even taste it. Plus, I use 10 grams of their micronized creatine. Creatine has been shown to improve brain health, especially for the aging brain. I need that. And of course, you know, we've always known about the muscle building effects. So this is my morning routine every day, and I'm encouraging you guys to do the same. Use our code THINK for savings. Plus, it's the only way for them to know that this advertising is being heard. Otherwise, they just think you're some random dude that clicked on an ad.
Ain't nothing to it but to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep, I agree with you 100%, Skip. 10 milligrams a day, probably from the same, right around the same time period, 2010, primarily for the blood pressure. You know, I found some research on it years ago. I believe most people will see somewhere between an 8 and 18 point drop in their systolic. Usually that's about like 3 to 7%, somewhere around there. And that's what I see. I did do a little experiment. Was it December, January? I stopped taking it completely because I was running 25 milligrams of testosterone every other day. I wasn't training for 2 months. I just wanted to see what my blood pressure would do. And it did climb, you know, up into like 132, over 90, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I added it right back in. But yeah, no, I think, you know, it also has a slightly positive effect on HDL cholesterol.
How long ago was this?
Excuse me?
How long ago was this that you did this? When you were when you stopped taking the Silas?
December, like mid-December through February 2nd, 3rd.
Just this, the end of last year. I'm going back through my text right now.
Yeah.
I got a message, a text, bizarre too, from Rachel. She said, talk to Andrew. And I didn't even, I just hit her back with a question mark and I didn't hear back from her. I don't know. That explains it. So
the way you said that, like it was 100% serious.
It was good.
Hook, line, and sinker. Right, hook, line, and sinker.
I thought you were going to tell me that your cycles were synced up.
Yeah.
You're like, that's when I stopped taking it, too. That's what I thought you were going to say.
But obviously, you know, it does. You know, when people talk about all these pre-workout products, all these expensive pre-workout drinks and stuff that they take, I would rather do 10 milligrams of Cialis over any of the different aminos and whatnot. Some water and some sodium to me is much more important than any of the pre-workout products on the mix, because I mean, everyone knows when you get a great pump and you've been taking Cialis and you're in contest shape, it's like your shoulders are just 20% bigger. Everything is bursting, you know? I mean, cause it does what it does. It's a PDE5 inhibitor. It increases cyclic GMP and it causes, it basically makes nitric oxide easier and relaxes smooth muscle tissue in all parts of the body.
Exactly.
Pre-contest. What about, you know, getting on stage with it?
So here's the thing, though. It's not like you're walking around like, you know, carrying a third leg.
Oh, no, I wasn't even saying that. I just figured I'm trying to segue into, like, because I've used it pre-contest to grade
it. Gotcha.
You know?
Definitely plays into it. It used to be Viagra. But Viagra, look, my opinion, let's compare the two. Viagra is antiquated because you got about a 4-hour, 5-hour window, and it's the same with the shows and everything. Cialis is just so much. I mean, they have to be just killing it over Viagra because take it. And if you don't take it for a day, it's not like you're going to lose your edge from a blood pressure standpoint, you may, but it's long lasting. You don't have to time
it. You know,
I can imagine that old guy who's like pissed because his wife is sidetracked because she's doing something else. And he's looking at the clock like, bitch, I got like 30 minutes. Like, we got to go.
It's funny because I did.
It's a pill.
Yeah. I did see a flyer one time about, you know, the different products, Levitra, Cialis, you know.
Is Levitra even around anymore?
I don't think it's prescribed. Cialis is completely taken over the market for the reasons we're talking about. But the flyer had a picture of a guy who was literally looking at his clock. And like, you know, his wife is over here and he's like, it was like, you know, one of those things like, hey, I got 20 more minutes or this magic isn't going to happen, you know? Yeah. So it's funny you describe that same scenario, but yeah, no, I think it's superior to, you know, any of the other PDE5 inhibitors out there. And the other thing is the safety profile, right? Like, I think that's an important component. It's one of those drugs you can take that, sure, if you took too much of it, yeah, you could have a rapid drop in blood pressure, especially if you're using nitrates, which people who are, you know, who do have heart disease and are taking nitrates for chest pain and whatnot do need to watch that stuff. But it has a pretty high safety profile in terms of a wide range of people, men, women, all, you know, ages can take it, and they're not going to have an adverse effect.
And can I piggyback off that? Because I think this is important. Where you, Scott, you had touched on it about the show. Clearly, you know, it works for vascularity going into a show too. What you want to be careful of is if you use, and I say if because I thought everybody used it because I've used it since 2002. If you use AMP, adenosine monophosphate, basically scintillator, before the show, a couple hours before the show, for vascularity, and you have a bunch of Cialis in you, you're going to need to be careful because scintillator will drop your blood pressure very quickly. And that's why people pass out if they hit too much of it or they hit it twice. It used to be back in the day, you'd hit it for prejudging, they'd hit it for finals. And you'd literally, a lot of them would pass out because of the dosing before finals. It's just overkill. You don't need to do that. Only once that day and you're fine. But you need to be careful with things like that for that same reason, because the blood pressure will bottom out if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. Well, it'll bottom out anyway.
That's a great point. Well, no, that's a great point because, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if you've talked a lot about scintillator. I know we've done it a few times on the show, but you and me have talked about it with using it with clients privately. And that is a good reminder to say, hey, we should probably not be taking the Cialis for 2 days prior, or we should at least really be cognizant of what's going on, you know, with both things that can cause blood pressure decreases, the scintillator being the more rapid one.
Very good.
That's a great point.
So Skip actually got a bunch of listener questions for us. And like I said, we got some Patreon ones too, but I'm going to jump in with this one. Skip grabbed. He says, analyze this scenario. A friend did 900 tests, 300 deca. This is every week with 1 milligram of Arimidex. This was last year. Estrogen levels not recorded. This year, he does 900 test in 450 primo, no Arimidex. Estrogen was 38, so he bumps the test up to 1200 in the primo, down to 300. So he was at 900 and 450. Now he's at 1200 and 300. No ADEX. Estrogen levels unknown after the test increased. He said his strength was much better on the 900 test and 300 deca, which he had done the previous year. Do you think that this could be estrogen level related or compound related?
Well, here's the problem. Why didn't he do his estrogen?
Yeah.
This became a huge guessing game now. So off the top of my head, I'm thinking, could it? Sure. But there are a myriad of other variables in there. I mean, is he training under the same, you know, factors or variables that he was, you know, between the two cycles? Was everything the same?
Let me paint a scenario. Let's say the 900 test, 300 deca, his estradiol was somewhere like 52 or 48 or something like that. Let's just guess, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the second cycles with test primo, you said his estradiol, I'm sorry, was it 38?
38.
Yep.
Okay. Let's just go off. Let's make a scenario up like that, that was what happened, right? So I'm giving it back to you now.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we can all agree that higher estrogen typically helps 99% of the time with progression, recovery, and strength. So assuming that all the other variables were the same, yeah, it would help. Is a 38 to a 52 a huge change? Yeah, probably not. But could it factor into it? Sure. I think there's a bigger picture here and a bigger point, I guess. And that is, I think a lot of people naturally assume, and I know I've done it. We've probably all done it. Well, I increase my dosage. I should be, a little stronger. I should look a little. That's just not always the case. It's not just a connection between, I'm taking more gear. There's obviously the ratios and the balance of the hormones, but there's just so many other factors in there too. And one of them being typically when we take more gear, I don't know, we tend to train a little harder.
Yeah, there's that.
Good point. So there is that, that point too. I always said that people always bitched back in the day. They're like, well, when I come off cycle, I lose all my gains. Well, maybe it's because you come off cycle and you're not as motivated and you're not training as hard, or you haven't made the adjustments to your training. So your recovery now is horrible, because when you come off a cycle and go to TRT or even come off completely, if you make the correct and most efficient, optimal changes that you can to your training, you should still be progressing and recovering just fine. Not at the level that you were on cycle.
Yeah.
But you should still be progressing. If you're regressing, you got to look closer at your training and your nutrition and your recovery versus, I'm just not on gear and accept it and walk away.
One other factor to that, because I can think of a client/friend that I had, and I say client because it was more like we won a show and then he kind of just did his own thing in the off season. We were supposed to get him ready for a national show, but that just never materialized 10 years ago now. And pre-contest or, when he's geared up, 6 meals a day, meals on time, supplements taken, cardio done, the training, obviously, and he just blows up and grows like a good pro, right? Yeah. He probably should have been a pro. Soon he goes off, training falls to like 2 days a week till eventually no training at all. Oh. Meals go from 6 meals a day down to 4, maybe 3 if he has time. Mm-hmm. Definitely no health supplements in the mid. So you get what I'm saying? So it's not just the training. It's also all those other little things that you were doing when you were being successful start to fall by the wayside,
How about this
I was just going to take it further, and I probably don't need to. Let me just I'll be quick and say this. I think that 20 years ago, if we go back to the early 2000s, it was a different game in the off season. It was more like, I don't want to say it was a free for all, but if you compare the off seasons now to 20 years ago, the off seasons now for people who are committed and who are on their game and want to be really good, a really good bodybuilder, they're basically prepping in the off season. They're just taking in more calories.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
100%. So it's a constant prep. It's a 24/7, 365 year after year versus what it was back then. And, we saw those pictures of, Jay Cutler, just slamming food and Lee Priest eating buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken. So we assumed he did that, every single day. It was more of a, just eat everything that isn't nailed down. And I am really happy to see, of all the things I complain about, and I complain about a lot of in this industry, I'm glad to see, even though it took time, that has changed for the better. Not only health, but the gains are cleaner. It's just, it's just better.
Health's better.
All right. Derek says, harm reduction approach to PED use for over 40s. Deca versus Primo as a secondary compound. Old school versus new school. What's the pros and cons?
I think it's a pretty good question. And I'm not a big fan of Primo because I don't respond to it well myself, but I have seen so many clients. It's almost like I wish I did. I'd be lining up for Bear Primo just to know that I had the best Primo out there, even though there's good Primo, but it just doesn't work well for me. I like that we're going more the Primo route and that Deca is becoming a bit of an antiquated, I'm still an NPP fan, and I know that's, you know, essentially same thing, but not in, in big doses and not to rely on. I use it as one of maybe three or four compounds, and it's typically more of an off-season or beginning of a cut phase type of compound that I phase out. I am becoming a much bigger fan of Primo based on how so many of my clients have responded to it, especially with estrogen control, because anytime you can minimize AI usage, it's a big deal. I mean, anytime you can get another drug out of there, that's pretty good. And to see the estrogen, it, the impact that it has on estrogen, I'll admit 6-7 years ago, I didn't know that. I didn't see it. I didn't connect the two. So I like it. And I think it's I don't want to say it's an innocuous compound.
Sure.
But it's certainly the safer route versus a lot of the, and what is it? A compound that's going to put a lot of weight on you like Defen? No. So blood pressure is going to be in better shape. Don't have to take an AI. There's just so many pros, I think, to using it if you respond well to it.
Yeah. That was a big thing. If you respond well to it, right? Like you said, what do you think, Andrew?
I really don't have much to add. I just think like what we finished up with is, you know, I would go with the one you feel and you train better on. And as long as you're controlling your health variables, then if it ends up being DECA, go with DECA. But I'm more in the camp of what Skip described with the Primo Bowl in use. So, yeah.
And I think we've all, because we all kind of came to that conclusion. We all realized it on the podcast one day that we really liked the combo of test, EQ, NPP. And I think that NPP in that cycle is, it is very helpful, but it's in perspective. It's not like just let's just crank it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, for me, it was like, I think I probably ran it lower than you guys did, because mine would be like around like 1200 test and maybe 800 EQ. And then honestly, I felt great with like, we'll say like 50 NPP every other day, something like that. When you guys did that kind of cycle, did you keep it lower end or did you push that higher than I did? Like I'm using it right now. Wise.
I'm using it right now. Similar.
That cycle?
Test and EQ. Yeah. Okay. But NPP is 75 milligrams 3 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah. I have an odd ratio that I just came to. I don't like set up my cycles this way, but I'm running test EQ and NPP. The test is typically 50% and the EQ and the NPP are 25%. That's usually, so for numbers, arbitrary numbers, but if it's 1200 tests, then it might be, you know, three and three.
That'd be 50.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, gotcha.
Again, arbitrary numbers, but.
I like that.
What again, there's no formula. There's no exact formula that we could give.
I said 3 and 3. My math is horrible. 6 and 6.
I must have got it wrong.
There's got to be more than a few people are like, his math is not mathing. But yeah, 6 and 6. Again, they're arbitrary numbers. So, you know, it could be 1,000. It could be, you know, 500, which, you know, typically if it's an off-season cycle for me, I'm around 2 grams. I don't. Yeah, 1800, 1600 in there somewhere. I don't usually go too big in the off season. I leave my larger dosages to cutting and prep. Mm-hmm.
All right. So we got one from YouTube. Why use protein powder when you can drink egg whites for almost the same cost?
I know. I read this.
We're going back to the egg whites again, huh?
Yeah, I just.
You're not a fan of egg whites?
Drinking them? No. I mean, and I'm not talking about the, what's that company? Muscle Egg, right? Okay. Like, I am not talking about that product because they have done complete denaturing and complete, you know, they've denatured the Avidin, and it's a very digestible protein drink. I've had it. It's just a little too expensive for me to drink, you know, 2 times a day or whatever. Yeah. But, no, like I remember, I think it was a Craig Titus video, one of the mock videos from like 98 Olympia or sometime before he went to prison. And he's sitting there in his kitchen and he's just pounding liquid egg whites. And he's like, he says something like, why would I waste money on protein shakes? Like, these sponsors just give these to me, you know?
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, dude, your digestive system. But yeah, I mean, if you, the issue is you're not absorbing all that protein. So I don't know the exact numbers, but there's a thing called avidin, which binds the amino acids, and you need to denature that. Now, yeah, you could say, okay, well, they're pasteurized, which might do some partial denaturing, but right. It's not, there's a reason why we cook an egg, right? To make it absorbable. And just drinking raw egg. And plus, I mean, I wouldn't want to be around you if you're drinking two of those cartons a day. Like, oh, I'm dude. Sorry, but
I gotta tell you, man, I did.
I did.
When I was trying to like really push food up, and I realized, mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm getting creative working for the pop company. And I was like, what else can I get from the grocery store here that's protein? I'm on the clock, right? And I'm like walking around looking. I was like, yeah, I'll get two of these bagels. That'd be good. It's about like 120 carbs. I already ate meal one. You know, I'm just going to kind of bridge. I was bridging my meal one with meal two. And I was like, I'll get one of these cartons of egg whites. Chug that thing down. Go in the bathroom. Take a little insulin. I'm good, you know? And then later I was like, what if I work in another one? Well, I found that 2 cups of liquid egg whites, even though they were pasteurized, that was my limit. If I tried to do that again later in the day, oh my God, it went straight through me like liquid. And and you know what I noticed too, is that people who use them a lot, they end up, even if they tolerated it first, the more you use and the longer you've used it, the more you start to get like some sort of weird allergy response to it.
Yes. 100%.
That ranks up there with my Orange Ruffy story. Orange Ruffy, really good until you have too much and there's a line.
What? How much was too much for you, Skip? Do you remember?
I could eat it twice a day and I never had any problems. But if I went to 3, and I'm not kidding, it would just run out. Leak out.
Is Orange Ruffy? Is it? It must be a low mercury fish.
Well, it was protected 10, 12 years ago. You couldn't even get it. That was shortly after the Jay. Maybe it was because of Jay Cutler. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Because the bodybuilding community grabbed it. And it tasted really good. I mean, it was one of those fishes, one of those fish that it tasted oily and fatty, but it wasn't. It was a good fish. I don't even know. I mean, I assume you can get it now. I just don't go anywhere near it.
I'm only asking because I just found out I have some mercury poisoning going on.
Oh, you're kidding
me. That right?
Yeah, dude. Like I was feeling worse and worse, and I was insomnia like every day. And I could train, right? But then my muscles would cramp, like, or just squeeze up, like my adductors, my lower back, like everything would just squeeze as soon as I tried to get up off the couch. So I thought, okay, am I just needing to stretch more, you know? Or I checked my electrolyte content and I started adding a bunch of this and a bunch of that, and it just got worse and worse. And then I'm like, I've done all these lab tests over the last month and I'm not getting any better. I'm not seeing anything in the labs. And I'm like, let me check my heavy metals. Let me just see if I've got lead or arsenic or mercury. And sure enough, the results came back last Saturday. My mercury was through the roof. And
no kidding.
You know what? It's my own fault. I usually eat sushi grade ahi tuna twice a week or twice a day. Twice a day.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm trying to get an idea because I have 4 or 5 poke bowls every Sunday to load. And I've every time I start to eat them, I'm like, what about Dom? How much?
Well, I was going to actually call Dom to figure out, because I started shooting emails to all the places around here that do chelation therapy because I want to get this taken care of.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what are you going to do?
I'm going to do the chelation therapy, the infusions. I think you got to do like 12 to 15 of them to bind to the mercury so you excrete it out. I looked into this guy's method, Dr. Cutler's method, but you literally have to take like ALA and some other supplement every 3 hours on the dot, around the clock, setting your alarm. Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I think I'll just go sit in the chair and have someone put a needle in and chelate it. But so obviously no more fish for me at all for a while. It's,
how
you know,
long
I live down
did
here.
You do that? How long did you do that? Like when you were saying ahi, like a day.
I've been
for
doing
a while.
It since, we moved down here last February, I wouldn't say every single day, but there'd be at least, I'd have one of those meals a day. And then
they're easy to eat and it tastes good as hell.
That's the thing. I'm not going to have to worry about mercury poisoning. I have never eaten it. I've watched people eat it. I couldn't do it. It does not.
It's really my favorite meal.
I've never tried it, but it doesn't. Look good to me.
Oh, dude, you don't know what you're missing, right, Skip?
Yeah, it's really.
Well, I know I'm missing mercury poisoning. That's for sure.
Yeah, you're missing mercury poisoning. That's a good that was well played, actually. But it is. It's deconstructed sushi in a sense, but it's cleaner because it's not cleaner, but. There's so many different types of sushi that I even have to be careful with my clients when I tell them, you know, you can load on sushi. And then they're telling me how they had tempura covered, you know, everything. Yeah. I'm like, come on.
Cream cheese in it.
Yeah. You know, if you have one roll as a California roll, okay, cool. But if you have 12 of them and half of them are tempura, it's just, come on now. Yeah. So I just wanted I got into scallops. About 3 or 4 years ago, and they were expensive as hell, but they were really good, and they were easy to get down. Plus, remember, I have that choking thing where the muscle before, so something like a scallop that's in a little bit of like a little bit of water, like that you would cook them in, it's very moist, and I don't get it stuck in my throat. So ahi, same thing. It's very wet. Same. It's not. You don't cook it, right?
Yeah, No.
You just cut it and eat it with some soy sauce or kanzu or something.
Dude, they cut it for me. It comes all sliced up, and literally I would just do – because there's this fresh fish market right down the road, and I'd go to every day or every other day, and I would do 240 grams, and then I'd do my 200 grams of rice, half an avocado, and then I'd throw – if I have blueberries or pineapple, I usually have a fruit that I throw on there too, and then either some carrot shavings or – some other veggies, whatever we got lying around. It's just honestly, Scott, it's I know it sounds weird to mix.
Yeah, it does, man. And you start saying blueberries and I'm like, I'm trying to, I'll try it one day. I will.
Try one day.
Yeah. But I can't picture it.
Well, and again, as I get older, I have a hard time eating, and I'm so sick of eating chicken breast. I'm so sick of eating beef. I'm so sick of, so it's like, man, I can eat this and like literally I feel like we're talking earlier about flat stomach. Like I get done eating it. I feel like I have a nice flat stomach. I can eat again in 2 hours. It doesn't bog you down. I felt great energy off of it.
Fish does that for me in general. Like I get hungrier, you know, I'll eat fish in it. Like it helps me to spike my appetite and eat more really, you know?
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, you can get really full and then 3 hours later you can eat again. That's why I'm loading on it.
Yeah.
Let me see what else we got here. All right. So we've got a, we'll save that one for the next show. Pretty good question. But that's not to say these other questions are not good questions. We covered that one. How about this? Is it even possible to truly lose/slow down your metabolism in prep while supplementing with T3 and T4?
I mean, depends on how much. If you're literally only using 12.5 mics and you're eating no food for a long stretch of time without spiking your metabolism with refeeds and whatnot, then yeah, your metabolism can still slow down. Like T3 isn't just a straight magic portal to increasing your metabolism necessarily. Plus, if you're missing cofactors and vitamins and minerals that contribute to metabolism, then yeah, you can absolutely still have a slow metabolism. Well, think of it this way. How many times do you get a client who goes to a doctor and they're prescribed T3 or Armour thyroid or some thyroid therapy, and they have to go back and adjust the dose and increase it because it's not doing enough? Right?
Oh yeah,
because their labs are showing, hey, we're still in a hypothyroidal state, or the opposite's true too. I mean, how many times do they go back in and the doctor lowers the dose?
Yeah.
So there's absolutely, it's not like just magic because you're adding T3 and it's automatically going to work. It is dose dependent and everyone's dose is a little bit different.
And I think too, as that T3 dose comes up, and I don't want to overcomplicate the question, but as that T3 dose comes up, the T4 has more of a likelihood that that's going to convert to reverse T3 or that the T4 reverse is going to, thank you. Convert. Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm saying it correctly. So, I know myself, and I don't take T3 as high as I used to back in the day. It used to be, that you'd run them in increments of 25 microgram, and it was not uncommon to be up around 100 microgram. And it took me a while to figure out this is really eating up muscle tissue. I mean, you can drive yourself flat as hell and really not start to look good with those higher dosages.
Oh, yeah.
So as my T3, here's an example, just so that in case anybody's listening is wondering, if I'm on 25 micrograms of T3 and I'm going to take it up to, 40, I will definitely start to cut down or cut out a small T4 dose, because I feel like anything over 25 microgram, I don't know that T4 is really doing much of anything anyway. And it could be argued that, okay, it's converted to reverse T3, so you're not using it anyway. But I don't want to take something if I'm not going to benefit from it. So I'd rather just eliminate it and rely on the extra 10 or 15 microgram of T3. But I can tell you, at 40 microgram, I already don't like it. Just jumping from 25, even with dropping the T4, because in 3 days, I'm below baseline. And I was at the same weight all last week and was tighter. So I'm already seeing, I'm like, oh, man, I might have to back off on this, because it's only Wednesday and I'm already under baseline by a pound. And feeling it. Like, this is where yesterday I remember thinking, it's only Tuesday. It feels like Friday. In the gym, I was just like, ooh. So, and it's the only thing I changed. Only thing.
A related note, is it even possible to OD on T4 and risk muscle loss, as it first needs to be converted to T3 by the body? Same guy.
Is it possible to overdose on T4?
Well, I mean, I believe it's take too much, right? I mean, it's not, because you're not going to technically overdose and have to go to the hospital or anything like that.
No, but I think, as you started to allude to, it's just going to convert to reverse T3 at that point. So, yeah, I think you're going to get a lot of conversion to T3 if the scenario is right, but I think you're going to get a lot more conversion to reverse T3. Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, here's the thing. A lot of people don't check their reverse T3 when they do their thyroid labs. Right. And I always ask people to do, you know, free T3, free T4, TSH, reverse T3, both sets of thyroid antibodies. Like, for me, that gives the complete picture.
Because when someone's like, oh. Yeah. You can't get like an actual read of what's going on with like one or two things.
Yeah.
Well, that's the basic panel. I mean, we could do a whole topic on the next show on that. I think that a basic CMP and CBC are, I don't want to say useless, but it is step one on a step 10 of blood work. If you do basic rudimentary blood work and you get back, oh, I'm great, man. Yeah. I don't know if that's doing what we do there. So even just the regular EGFR related to bun and creatinine. I mean, we're bodybuilders. Come on. Yeah. There's, you know, cholesterol, same thing, your cholesterol numbers versus what the LDL actually, what those particles look like. Night and day different. You could come back with normal numbers and you could be effed because I'm to the point now where I'm telling clients, look, do your basic number, but we need to step another two or three steps into this to look a little bit closer, especially with my demographic, because my demographic tends to be older like myself. And there you can miss some in there.
Well, I'm even more surprised at some of the labs that doctors order for like a thyroid panel, like T4 index or, total T3. Like, none of those numbers don't really tell us much of anything. Like, we need
TSH, like at a physical.
Sometimes just a TSH, right? But even
TSH is good. You're fine.
But just some of these other tests, and I've tried to ask doctors, thyroid specialists, you know, through YouTube, like doctors that put out stuff about thyroid, like, why is it that doctors ask for, say, these panels, which we know just don't really do anything? Like, what are they doing with those numbers that maybe I don't understand, so I can learn? And they never got back to me. But
the answer to that. It's the same reason that you have to get a basic scan before an MRI. Yeah. It's a procedural step that they have to do. It sucks.
And it has to warrant looking further. TSH is fine. Exactly. Then we can't dig any deeper. You're good.
Yep.
Well, that's like saying, you know, do you feel like you had a heart attack today? Well, I mean, I think I'm okay. But meanwhile, you know, your HDL cholesterol might be 3. And your LDL might be 250, and you definitely your calcium score might be through the roof. Like, it warrants some real investigation, you know?
Yeah. I've often wondered, why do we even bother? Why does anybody or a blood test or a doctor or a panel, why do they care what total testosterone is? Why not just do free testosterone? Because no one gives a shit if it's not usable, if it's not.
I don't know, but that's a good
question. I may be missing something, but it doesn't matter from a bodybuilding standpoint what it is. So I'm thinking if it's not available to be used and it's bound, then I don't know. Now, maybe I'm missing a step that even bound testosterone can increase cholesterol, you know, or something like that. That may be. I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on the podcast or the internet, but that has always been a question of mine, and especially related to the bodybuilding industry, because I have a lot of clients who are new to TRT and they're like, well, my total schmodal, like your free testosterone's in the toilet, your SHBG's through the roof. So let's take a closer
look. Maybe because it's a fun number to brag to your buddies at about, like, oh, I got mine to 16,000, or, you know, if you're McCarver, RIP, I got mine to 52,000 or whatever that number was. Remember, it was something absurd that I just ridiculous. Never seen. Yeah. Wasn't it like 50,000?
Something like
I
that.
I can't remember, but it was just so insane that it
like
just
my jaw dropped when brain. I saw it. Like, put it that way. Like, yeah. I was like, I've never seen anything remotely like that before. Again, RIP.
Yes. All right. Got a good closer here from Matt Blevins. He says, best phrase for a straight single man to have on his gym shirt or tank. He says, my personal favorite is, I know I'm your gym crush.
Is it PC or not PC?
Like, I was going to say.
Because, like, I mean.
You're the guy wearing it. You're the one wearing it.
I mean, we got to actually, Rachel's got a great shirt that she wears at the gym. And it's Donald Trump in his, you know, have you seen the one where he's in his boxing? He's got not his physique. It's someone else's physique. And he's got the boxing gloves. Have you seen that?
I think I've seen that.
When we were up in Vermont, she'd always get like stares like, this girl's fucking wearing a Donald Trump shirt. Whereas like down here, everyone's like, yo, I love your fucking shirt. Like, that's awesome.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. This is Ron DeSantis, Republican country down here.
Yeah. I won't forget at the Arnold. I saw one of the t-shirt booths. I didn't even get a chance to really walk around too much, but I went down a couple aisles and there was a t-shirt booth that had all sorts of like silly slogan t-shirts. And they had a shirt that said, I heart MILFs. And I was like, oh, okay. But then I saw like a 9-year-old kid wearing it. And that's when it was really funny. It was like, he was literally like walking around with his parents, 8-9-year-old kid with an I Heart MILF shirt on.
My buddy lets his young daughters, she wore an FJB shirt to school and they made her take it off and turn it around.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Or maybe it was a Let's Go Brandon one or something like that. But that was kind of funny. I mean, I guess there's all sorts of funny ones, but I can't think off the cuff, you know, like trend hard or something, you know, like I see a lot of the kids wearing. Actually, it's always hilarious when you see a 17-year-old kid wearing a shirt with references to trend or your test or like that one always like gets a double take out of me.
Yeah. And I think that's why they wear it. I mean, they're looking for that connection, that kind of that bond. Like, yeah, I'm young, but I know what's up.
That's I had a friend that had one of the Tokyo Labs t-shirts.
I remember those.
You'd have to know to know. You know what I mean, Skip? You saw the t-shirts?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if I saw the t-shirt. I remember, but I mean, as soon as you said Tokyo Labs.
Of course. Like, you know the brand.
Two Ys or two Ks? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was weird spelled.
Something
but
like that. Yeah.
Wait, what did they make? It sounds vaguely familiar.
They were a vet lab out of Mexico. Like back there when all the Mexico was popular.
Before Operation Gear Grinder and all that, when they busted everybody. Well, before that.
No, that was like, this was like 2000, late 90s, early 2000s.
That's what I was thinking, Early 2000s.
Wasn't Gear Grinder like in 2003 or 2?
That was 2000. I think Gear Grinder, I want to say it was like 2000. I thought Gear Grinder came after Operation Raw Deal. Let's find out for
that. Oh, you know what? Maybe you're right. I might be getting them mixed up.
I was in Sturgis, and I wouldn't wear any of these shirts, to be honest with you. I'm not.
Me neither.
I like to be funny and stuff, but I can't do things like that. But I saw a shirt that said, you said I cannot be appropriate, so I'm going to. I eat pussy like a fat kid eats chocolate cake. And it made me think of that fat kid in Matilda. Right, you guys tell me. Well, you don't have kids, so you may not have seen Matilda, but
I've seen
the
it.
Principal made
Danny DeVito, him eat, right?
Yeah, made him. Yeah. But that fat, that what's her name, Miss? Oh, that's terrible.
Trumbull,
yes, Trumbull or something. Trump.
I don't know how that just came to me, but like it did.
Yeah, that wasn't the principal though. That was
okay.
Yeah, it was 2005, so it was before Raw Deal.
Okay.
But she made him eat that entire cake, and that's what it made me think of. So I could think of other little kid funny eating. Shit. Smash or pass, but those aren't things that I, you know.
You know what shirt was always great back in the day was MILF Hunter. and the co-ed naked. Co-ed naked shirts were the bomb.
That's funny.
Do you guys
remember those?
I don't know.
What?
No. Co-ed naked?
For every single sport, there was some sexual innuendo. Oh. It was like a big... Do you remember like the college hats, the white hats with like UVM or U of M? It was like on that kind of trend, but it was... oh, man, I'm going back to like when I was in grade school, because kids would wear them in grade school. Like there'd be a funny rhyme, like let's say co-ed naked volleyball.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, you know, trying to put sand in your... I don't know, something like not in your hand or I don't know, something stupid. I can't rhyme with it, but
yeah.
something clever that the kids always had to take their shirts off and turn them around when the teacher saw them.
So I just thought of one that's kind of embarrassing to admit that I had. Do you guys remember that Big Johnson company, Skip?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I do.
Okay. I'm surprised, Andrew, you
remember. I get the reference.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, they had like the Big Johnson t-shirt company or something. And there was like this character, this guy that would be on the front of it. And he was like on a riverboat. And he's like welcoming you into this riverboat. And his hands are like this. I got this shirt and it lasted in my house. I was probably like 14. It lasted in my house for like a week. And my mom washed it. And she was like, I know what that means. It said, welcome to Big Johnson's riverboat. Liquor up front. Poker in the rear.
In the back.
Yeah, okay. Yep. I can't believe it. I wore it one time in my mind. Oh my God.
Moms ruin everything.
They really do. I'm embarrassed I remember that. All right, guys, we appreciate you tuning in. If you're hanging out with us this long and you haven't subscribed, then you pretty much, you know, you already made the decision. So hit the button and hit the bell, too, so that you can get notified that our content's out. Otherwise, you may never see us again. We may disappear in the algorithm. check out truenutrition.com. Use our code THINK over there for additional savings. Supplementsource.ca for Canadians. Guys, if you want to get some coaching, you can reach out to Andrew at bodyberry.com. You can reach out to Skip at teamskip.com. And you can reach out to me, McNallyDiets@gmail.com. Thank you to everybody from Patreon. You guys are helping to make this thing happen. And for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we will see you soon. I can't remember. Can't believe I remembered that t-shirt. Oh, Skip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. The word of it.
I tell you, I was so, you know, and here's the funny thing. What was on my brain was my daughter, my youngest daughter got me a
t-shirt. We're live still, just let you know.
Yeah, that's cool. But got me a t-shirt for Christmas. And it's one of those t-shirts that fits really well, like it's flattering. So I really want to wear it, but it says, with a body like this, something about being bald. Who needs hair when you have a body like this? And there is no way. Because I know what I would think if I saw somebody wearing it.
Tool bag.
Yeah, fucking tool. Yeah. Like, that guy drives a truck with rubber balls hanging off the hitch. Like, I'm not, that's not my thing.
It'd be funnier if you're, like, way out of shape. Like, save it.
Yeah,
save it for when, like, you do your off season.
Oh, it's always funnier when someone's way out of shape and they're wearing shirts like that. I see these memes all the time online. I wish I would have thought of one. You know, like this big fat dude, beard down to here. And it's like, I'm going to find one and send it to you. I did just send you a couple co-ed naked t-shirts. These are remakes. They're not as nearly as good as the originals.
We're still rolling, guys. So Skip, can you give us, I'll pull those up. And Skip, can you give us your word of the day?
Yes. Now, I do understand that you have a new, not rule, but recommendation.
It was just a thought. Yeah. A challenge.
And I agree with you, but I still want to use the one that I didn't get to use last time. You want me to do it right now?
Yeah. Let's hear one.
Okay. Everybody knows Murphy's Law. It's whatever can go wrong, will go wrong, right? Murphy's Law. Muffrey's Law. The R comes after the PH. Oh, that's cool. You know what this one is. All right. But the R comes after the PH.
No, it's just funny.
It's Muffrey's Law. And the definition or what it means is you never correct someone's grammar without making damn sure that you're not going to make a mistake while you're correcting them, because that would be Murphy's Law. And here's the cool thing. You catch people because if this is – and I do this because it's just so awesome. You'll be on a viral video or something. Somebody will correct someone's grammar.
Yeah.
And they'll spell something wrong. And I'll write textbook Murphy's Law or something to that effect. And they come back and say that I spelled it wrong. And I wait for them to come back and say I spelled it wrong. And then I tell them that they might want to Google Murphy's Law that I didn't spell it incorrectly. And you know they're just like, oh, I just got owned.
You just sit around on the internet waiting for gotchas. Yeah. Waiting to be like, gotcha.
When I have extra time, I'm telling you, I am that guy who goes on viral. Because there is no lower class people than on viral reels. Yeah. The things that are said are so lowbrow and so like a class of the population that is just so not intelligent and so minor. And so it's just bizarre. It's like, where do these people come from? And I'm entertained by it.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind sometimes to see how people react. But the reels are to the point where sometimes I'll be like, I can't even go to the comment section because something is just going to get me fired up.
That's what, like, all the, like, whenever we have something that gets blown up in our YouTube shorts, that's always, like, people come out of the woodwork that aren't even related to bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And they're, like, you know, just, like, the dumbest things. And they're, like, you guys, we don't even think you guys look cool. You know, once you get to a certain point, we just think roid head and move on with our lives. We don't care about you people.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us your opinion.
Like, yeah, that really
That was crucial to get that opinion out of you.
Yeah. I posted one of those and then our people started coming back at them. Like I posted the comments and the people from the Facebook group, like Tanya Miller, started going after him. And it was great because like she's just like she was owning everybody.
Takes care of it.
Yeah.
It's a subclass though of people. There's trolls but then there's just this subclass of trolls that is in their life the only –
Well, here's the thing, though.
Pathetic attention they're going to get, and they thrive on it.
You realize a lot of those aren't real people.
That's the other thing.
That's the troll farms from all these, from like Russia and even our own. Like our own government does these troll farms that they're trying to divide us. Like, for instance, I was on one yesterday where I was just seeing what was going on this island off the coast of Georgia, where I guess all these historically black college students congregate. Now they are a very rowdy bunch. They break into people's houses, they fight, and there's a lot of just riffraff going on. But then you see all the comments, there's people trying to incite racism with some horrible comments that like no one would ever say to someone's face. And then you look on these profiles and you're like, okay, this person has like 13 followers. They posted two pictures. Like they're not a real, they don't exist. It's a bot that did this.
I think so that's happening with the Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese stuff prior to the NCAA championship. Everything was race baited between those two, and it was horrible to watch. And then I started thinking, they're planting a lot of this shit, and it's just horrible. And even though I thought it was horrible, I'm like, I'm falling for it, just like the dumbass that was, you know, that's in there throwing racial comments around. Just horribly egregious thing. And I understand that, you know, that's how the internet is. But like I said, there's just still a subclass. Now, if you go into like police stuff with people, you can see, you know right away who the lowbrow criminals are because they're always going to stand up. No matter what the criminal did, they're wrong. I got to pee. I know we're live, but I got to go to the bathroom.
All right.